This is the American Jezebel.
You're talking nonsense. This is the Greasy Rapidian.
You're talking nonsense.
We're talking nonsense. All right, let's talk some nonsense. Man, I'm yelling already. We just started. I'm already yelling. All right, start us off, American Jezebel. This is episode 2.
Episode 2. And episode 2, like episode 1, is brought to you by Sustainabutter.
Oh.
I already forgot the tagline we made up for. All the delight of digesting without the nuttiness of nuts. I can't remember. But we shout out to our continued to be alleged sponsor,
yeah.
Sustainabutter. We're doing the good work of creating a delicious butter that's easy on the digestive system.
Yeah, our returning future sponsor. He's our first returning future sponsor.
So thank you, Sustainabutter. Keep doing your good work.
Keep doing that good
work.
Your
alternative to Nutella is delicious.
Very, very tasty. Okay, let's move on, because we got a movie to talk about.
We do,
but we're right there.
First, we need to introduce our new segment, Agree to Disagree. We had some great listener responses from episode 1, but
we
also had a bit of some corrections come in.
Specifically
about the our math.
Our rating system.
Because we did rate the movie off the top of our heads, converting it to the exponential
kissing booth scale.
And it turns out that we did not quite get our math right when we did it off the top of our heads.
We did not. Patting
ourselves on the back for being good at math.
Well, I thought we were pretty doggone close for just popping it out of our heads.
So, Greasy Rapidian, tell us where we went wrong with our math.
Well, I don't know that I'd say we went wrong, but I think we said that you were giving it about a 4.5 if we were doing it on a 5-star rating. But of course we're not. We're doing it on a 100,000 kissing booth scale. And so you gave it 25,000, but a 4.5 would actually be around 31,623. And so 25,000, you gave it 4.4 stars. I thought that was pretty doggone good. For the top of your head,
terrible.
You were looking for a 4.5,
yep.
You gave it a 4.4.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking pretty close to the ballpark, dude. I was looking to give it a 4.8, which would have been 63,096, about. But I gave it 82,327, which was actually closer to a 4.91. And dude was not a 4.91.
No.
Dude was a solid 63,096. And so I was off. And so as it turns out, the Greasy Rapidian was off by more than the American Jezebel was. Yes, which destroys the trope that young women are not good at math, as it turns out. Young women are good at math.
Or neither young women nor middle-aged men are good at math.
Okay, so there's a third possibility. But at this point, I think we're going to have to say, rather than correct our initial, I'm standing by my 82,327. Mm-hmm. American Jezebel, you standing by your
25,000. I stand by my 25,000.
And we're just
going
to have to
agree to disagree.
We're just going to have to agree to disagree. Because, Debbie, you're just talking nonsense. Thanks for the shout out, Debbie, but you're just talking nonsense. All right, let's move on. And if anybody else wants to correct us, we're happy to agree to disagree.
We are. Yeah, so thank you to the listener for correcting us on our
thank
math
you, Debbie.
There. Yes, thank you, Debbie. It came to my attention also that in our first episode, we didn't really explain our names that we've used on the podcast so far. Obviously, they are not our real names, they are actually our trail names. Have you heard of trail names before, Greasy Rapidian?
Well, yes, I have heard of them, and I think that it maybe came to the front in a movie that we're not gonna watch, the Reese Witherspoon movie, Into the Wild or whatever.
Oh, Wild.
Wild.
Wild,
not
yes.
Into the Wild, that's the
that's
Alexander.
The Emil Hirsch dies from eating poison berries movie.
Yeah,
yes.
No, so it's,
not that one.
Yeah. And so, yeah, Wild. And she's on the Pacific Crest Trail, and she gets a trail name. And as it turns out, people that walk on the trail, whether it's Appalachian or the Colorado Trail, the Continental Divide Trail, the Pacific Crest Trail, they get trail names when they're on the trail. And so the American Jezebel and I have walked on the trail.
We have.
We have not walked the trail, just to be clear. Don't call us and correct us. We're going to agree to disagree. We have walked on the trail. And so we have decided that we are worthy of giving trail names.
I think we're pretty good at it, too, because we also have heard some not great trail names either. Trail names that are given after less than 2 minutes of acquaintance with a person.
And lack any insight or originality.
Yes. We think trail names really need to say something about you as a person. Correct. Not what you're literally wearing, the color of your hair.
Or what you're carrying.
Yes.
Those are not good trail names.
No, trail names are really a reflection of you.
Yes.
In a much more profound way.
Yes, so as you can imagine, I was not wearing, nor was I carrying a greasy Ruffinian with me.
Do you want to tell us where your trail name came from? In the broadest terms.
Uh-huh. So maybe sometime in the future when we're having yucking it up with Joe Courtney, that you we'll have Betsy DeVos on. Mm. Who is a Rapidian. She is from Grand Rapids, Michigan. And I'm holding up my hand right now and pointing to Grand Rapids in my palm, where it is, right there. There's Grand Rapids mm-hmm. for all you listeners at home, if you can see where I'm pointing.
And so the Greasy Rapidian is famed for his love of the city of Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Home of Gerald R. Ford.
Yes. And also home to a great restaurant in America.
New Beginnings. We could be sponsored by New Beginnings, except we are going to give them 2 kissy booths as a review of their food.
So the Greasy and Greasy Rapidian comes from the unbelievable volume of grease that you consume if you ever go to New Beginnings, the diner in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
They, where have, we once ate they have a feature at New Beginnings that I've never seen at any diner before, that if you order 2 eggs, hash browns, and bacon, you could ask for a 3rd egg free. And I did not ask for a 3rd egg, and I still got a 3rd egg that I saw underneath a large tidal wave of yellow grease. I'm not sure what it was. And because of a lifetime of habit of cleaning my plate, I ate all of my food. And the Greasy Rapidian was my bile system was working overtime for the next 48 hours trying to digest the amount of grease. The American Jezebel, who was there with me, and Dr. No Nonsense, they wisely did not consume the large amounts of grease that I did.
We still consumed a lot because we did eat, but not quite on the same level as the Greasy Rapidian.
And just in defense of New Beginnings, the people that worked at New Beginnings were awesome. The people dining at New Beginnings were awesome. The food at New Beginnings was not. So 2 out of 3. It mm-hmm. was 2 out of 3. That 2 out of 3 things going for you. So we highly recommend you go there and get a glass of water, maybe a soda.
I think so. I bet if you get 2 sodas, you get a 3rd one for free.
Without asking. So that's where our trail name comes from. And so we're happy to give you a trail name if you would like. We would have to get to know you for longer than 10 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And we would not have to see you or see what you were carrying. But,
yes.
But we would be with you and we would quickly devise a great trail name that was probably quite humorous to us and much to your own disliking.
Yes. Some people have enjoyed their trail names more than others. We have some positive references, though.
Yeah. Columulus?
Yeah. Columulus.
Yeah, but Target Barf Bag did not like hers.
Target Barf Bag did not.
Nor did Icy Walrus.
No.
So those two did not. And I'm not sure about the Despot. I don't know that the Despot liked his either.
I think he did.
Yeah.
He wants to rule the world.
Yeah. One towel.
He loves to make the rules.
One towel was ignoring us. So now you have a sampling of what's in store for you should you decide to choose to have us give you a trail name at no cost to you.
Yes.
Just write to us, say when we can meet or how we can meet, and we're happy to give you a trail name.
Absolutely.
Another thing that we should probably point out that we have a new segment. Terry chooses a non-monetized sport.
Yes.
Thank you. probably should describe who Terry is first.
Yes. There's a lot of, there's a lot of names that we have going on the podcast already. But yes, the other name for the Greasy Rapidian is Terry. Terry's name comes from his volunteer work teaching in a correctional facility. And there was a gentleman there who was a former boxer, not terribly thrilled by a lot of class that was happening. And so, he decided one way to show his his displeasure, or maybe it was some form of, I don't know,
It might have been affection.
Maybe it was affection.
I'd like to think of it as affection.
Okay.
Because he was a
lovely, gentle gentleman. Yes.
He was really quite lovely.
Yes. He, one student in the class, decided to call Terry by not Terry's name every single time. Just a different name that started with T every class. So, what are we doing in class today, Tony? What do I really have to read my poem here? What was some
Ted?
Ted. Because Terry had just expressed a displeasure at his own given name.
Right.
For a couple of reasons.
Which I made a point of very clearly telling them my name several times.
Yes.
And then he would say, "Well, Trey gave us his homework."
And I just found Terry to be the most hilarious one because it is the name that I would least give to Terry.
To the Greasy Rapidian?
Yes, to the Greasy Rapidian, yes.
So,
He's not a Terry to me, so it's the best one.
So one of the things Terry has decided is that Terry is a sworn off monetized sports, so no professional baseball, football, hockey, basketball. We could go on and on about the monetized sports. And the monetization of the sports is only one aspect of why they are so off-putting to me. But it's an easy way to distinguish them from pure sports. And so in my quest to watch a sport, because I do enjoy sports, I've been watching some non-monetized sports. And so every now and again, we'll have a segment, Terry chooses a non-monetized sport. And so I think today I'm going to go with kabaddi. So I've been watching kabaddi, and you might argue that it is monetized, but not very heavily in the United States.
Okay.
I recently watched the match between India and the Republic of South Korea. And it seems to be that it's more popular in that region of the world than it is in our region of the world.
And forgive my ignorance, but what is this sport?
Well, you know, so in the professional ranks, they don't have to do this. They have a clock that they are against. But in the amateur ranks, you have two teams of seven, and they stand on opposite sides of what looks like a tennis court without a net. And then one person from one team crosses the midline, and he is called the raider. And the other seven guys on the other side are called the anti-raiders or the defenders. And the raider's job, and then there's the little squares like the service courts on a court, on a tennis court. And so the raider can come into those, and then if he can cross the line like into the backcourt and touch one of the anti-raiders, and then get back across before they tackle him, he gets a point. If he touches two, he gets 2 points. If he touches three, and if he touches somebody and goes across, he can send them out, or he can bring one of his own guys who's been sent out back in. Okay? And so he can also, if he can get all the way to the end and get his foot across the end line and go back, then he gets like a bonus point. So he can get his foot across the end, touch somebody, and get back across, then he gets a bonus point plus the point of the person he touched.
Okay.
And it's really, really fun to watch because the anti-defenders, they like hold hands. And so they hold hands because their job is to get him. And even if they tackle him, he can still crawl and touch it. So not only do they have to tackle him, they dogpile on top of him so that he can't move anymore. Because if he touches the center line, he's back across. And so once he gets tackled, they just pile on top of him. And so they shift as they're, because he's like moving back and forth, like trying to probe into their defense. And as he probes, they kind of move around because all he has to do is touch him. So they have to stay far enough away from him so that he can't touch him. But then they're trying to get around the backside of him so that they can tackle him without him getting back over. And sometimes it happens that one person will tackle him and he'll be scrambling and then nobody will go near him because they know if they touch him and he gets across, then he'll get another point. you know? So it's really like this, like back and forth. And in the amateur rank, the raider who comes across and he has to go kabaddi, 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 kabaddi. And when he runs out of breath, if he doesn't get back across, he loses a point.
What?
But in the professional ranks, they have a clock. And so he's not going kabaddi, 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 kabaddi. They give him like 25 seconds. But I would love to see the amateur ranks where the guy's going kabaddi, 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 kabaddi. And then what happens is there's like, it's a lot of dancing and moving around. At some points, all seven guys are holding hands. And they've made like a big chain and they're kind of encircling the guy that's trying to touch the raider. So the anti-raiders are making a big giant web that's coming around and ready to catch him. And then all of a sudden there'll be like a movement and they'll, and like he'll touch, and then it's just a big giant dog pile. Super fun.
This does seem like it's actually an enjoyable, would you say this is one of the non-monetized sports you've enjoyed the most so far, Terry?
I would say it is one of the ones I have enjoyed the most. And so I started off with a great one. There are some other ones that I have tried.
But this is one you actually recommend to others.
This is one that I actually recommend to others.
Okay.
Yep. And so it's hard to get them in English commentary. Most of them are in Hindi.
Okay.
And so I've watched another one. I watched India versus Pakistan in Hindi, and it was somewhat hard to follow.
Okay.
And so for the novice like myself, I suggest you go with an English commentary.
Okay.
And there's no female sideline reporter, just in case you're wondering. So, all right.
All right. Should we talk about?
And I'd love to hear if anybody else goes and watches some kabaddi. K A B A D D I kabaddi.
Ooh, kabaddi. Okay. Yes. Please let us know.
Yeah.
Well, Gracie Rapidian, should we talk about the movie for this week?
Let's talk about that movie, shall
we? Okay. So we told our listeners 2 weeks ago that we would be reviewing the Netflix original rom-com Set It Up, that it falls within the liminal space. Though it is not a coming-of-age film, but it is a liminal space film.
Correct.
So we are going to get into our discussion of Set It Up. I think last time we just got straight into the discussion,
yep.
And I think
upon
I'm gonna
further
give,
review,
just a quick recap of what happens in the film. We hope you all have watched it.
Not because we're recommending the movie,
not necessarily.
For purposes of discussion,
but
we are
yes,
hoping that
so that you
have
can follow
the
discussion along. Yes, exactly. So Set It Up is the story of two assistants, two high-powered people in New York who work in the same office building. They have different professions, but they're both high-powered, demanding bosses. And these two assistants meet in a classic rom-com meet-cute where they initially hate each other but have lots of banter. And they are thrown together because they both want to work less, get their bosses off their backs a little bit. And so they come up with a scheme to make their bosses fall in love so that they will take a little bit of the pressure off of them. And they each have their own specific reasons. So
correct.
they can each reach whatever goals they want,
correct.
Which we'll discuss.
Yes.
And then in the process, naturally, of making their bosses fall in love, they realize that maybe they love each other. So that's kind of the broad bones of what happens in
that
Set
was,
It Up.
That was the pitch to the studio right there.
It was.
Let's
yes.
make this film. Love it.
Yes.
Love
and it's
it.
Netflix, so they said, yep, here you go. All right. So, Gracie Rapidian, do you have some initial thoughts you'd like to share about?
Well, so I'm going to start off at the very beginning.
Okay.
It's a very good place to start.
It is.
Yeah. So, as I have watched this movie, and so in preparation for this, I have prepared heavily. Watched the movie once, fell asleep the second time, and so watched it a third time.
Oh, you watched it a third?
I did, because I fell asleep okay. the second time. So I went back in a third time, and each of those viewings, it was interesting to me, because when I clicked on my Netflix account, at one point it said, Set It Up, and it showed a picture of the male assistant, Charlie, and his boss, Rick Otis.
Terrible
and so name. That's who was on the little icon to watch Set It Up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, that's odd. It's not about those two. Curious that it would be the two men of the story, that mm-hmm. that's what they would choose to put. And so then when I went to watch it the third time, I clicked on the icon, and then this time it was the two bosses. So the male boss and the female boss. And at no point in my watching of the Set It Up did I actually see her, Harper is her name, who I think the movie is actually about.
She is by far the star of the film.
By far the star.
For many reasons.
It may be a new segment.
Screen time, charm,
likability,
moral compass.
Yeah, it may be a new segment. By far the star.
Yes. In this case, Harper is by far the star.
This is a little foreshadowing to next episode, Joel Courtney.
Oh, God, by far the star.
So you better write that down. We have a new segment, By Far the Star. So if you hear some noises, this is us actually writing it down. And so she is by far the star, but at no point did she show up on the thing.
That's
so
really
right
weird.
Away I'm like,
yeah, I know Netflix, they have an algorithm and they put different pictures up to see if people watch more if there's a certain picture up, and then they'll determine that that's the picture they want to show. So sometimes that happens with other things that you watch.
Well,
they'll show you different
curious,
pictures. So that is very curious.
More people are watching the movie because of the two bosses who
Charlie?
Are just horrible characters. Or Charlie and the Boss, who is a nothing character and a horrible character.
Yeah.
So that's the criteria for watching. Okay, let's not get on with that.
So
that's my initial impression of the movie to begin with. And, of course, then the movie starts and it's very predictable.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just lay it out almost right away because whatever about, you know, here's the awful boss, here's the awful boss.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the overworked, completely devoted assistant. Here's the overworked, completely devoted assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And then here are their roommates,
mm-hmm.
who are by far the star.
Oh, my God. There's just, like, charm and charisma and life coming out of those side characters that, like, I just wanted to stay with them.
Correct.
Because Harper has a roommate who is this, like, kooky girl,
yeah.
who just is delightful. And she's this super kook who just apparently has slept with all these men, and she's just living her life.
Yeah.
And she's got this straight-laced boyfriend who dresses like a stepdad, she says. And they just, like, love each other. And the
yeah.
first scene he says, would you like a cold glass of water? And then he proposes to her. And that was his lead up. Would you like a cold glass of water? Oh, they're just delightful, right?
Delightful.
And then Charlie, who has this, his roommate is played by Pete Davidson.
What's his character's name?
We don't know.
We're just calling him Pete.
I don't know.
We're calling him Pete.
He's, yes. And he's gay and always plays third eye blind when he's hooking up with a guy. And he's a middle school teacher in the Bronx. And he has, again... He reads everything that's happening in
yeah.
the situation. He understands that Charlie's girlfriend is a blank slate of a person,
yes.
and that Harper is an interesting, charming, charismatic person.
Yep. And that his boss is a
yeah.
terrible person, and you wouldn't want to be like him, so stop being like him.
Yeah. So, the roommates are
just incredible.
Just delightful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it establishes this world.
Correct.
Yes. And one of the things that I wanted to tie it into with that I was thinking about too, one of the moments that I liked at the beginning, because it really does just set up, oh, look, this is what the world of being an assistant is like and of your bosses and how terrible they are, yada, yada. But when Harper comes home and her roommate's boyfriend proposes to her, and she has this initial reaction first where she comes in and she screams, or she hears the screaming and she runs into the room and the boyfriend has proposed.
Yes.
And she's like, oh, I said yes. And Harper just gets this almost terrified look on
right.
her face, and she says, but we're not old enough to get married.
We're too young to get married, yeah.
Yeah. And then she switches into, oh, I'm so excited. Yeah, all of that. And she's so excited for her. And then she's
yeah.
excited for her the rest of the movie. But I think going into our theme of the liminal spaces,
yes.
Harper has this moment at the beginning of the film of,
yes.
oh my God, like these other people in my life are doing these other things.
Yes.
And I'm not maybe moving into the places that I want to.
Correct. So she is definitely in a liminal space of, you know, I'm too young to get married.
Mm-hmm.
I'm too young to live my dreams.
Mm-hmm.
I should be somebody else's assistant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I should be living with my friend
mm-hmm.
in an apartment, you know, et cetera, because I'm still young and not a fully an adult.
Yes. And then she tells Charlie, I don't want to be an assistant when I'm 28, because that's when it gets to be really, really sad. So she's almost set this like bar for herself of, when I turn this age, that's when I'm going to be an adult, and that's when I'm going to actually do the things that I said I was going to do.
Yeah. And Charlie's 28.
Yes.
Yeah. And so he says, I'm 28. She said, I'm sorry for you.
Again, she is by far the star of the movie.
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So then when they figure out that what they're going to do is set these two up. Are we at this point now?
Yes.
This is when things start to happen.
Yes, they're going
to set these two up.
Because they have a meet cute and they fight about food and it's...
And there's all kinds of cute little things about who they are. You know,
yeah, she loves sports and she makes her cry.
Yep, and he's in love with his girlfriend and he runs to her at 2 a.m. with flowers when he finally gets off work. And the homeless guy will take the flowers, you know. Mm-hmm. So you have these cute little things of them trying to make their life work, but it's not working. And then they have this decision. And of course, it's Harper that decides this. She comes up with a strategy that we're going to get them together because they know everything about the other two. And so they're going to, and here's clue number one, they're going to Cyrano them. Is what she says. Mm-hmm. Let's Cyrano them. And then Charlie says, so this is a parent trap. This is clue number two of what the movie thinks it's going to be. It thinks it's going to be Cyrano, and it thinks it's going to be the parent trap. It's going to put the two of them together.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's the meta-analysis of the movie, breaking the fourth wall and coming out and telling us, this is what we're going to do for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so clever, this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're not going to pick apart the movie because that would be too much. So we're going to go back to Harper, who the movie is really about.
It is.
It's not the setup.
And there's something, there's a lot of reasons why she is the star.
Correct.
Because she is, charming. The performance by young Leah Thompson.
Baby
Leah Thompson is charming, you know? She's a girl. There's that great moment when they go to Yankee Stadium and they're up in the cheap seats and she's made friends with the old people who are up there. And she's like, these are the best seats because you can see everything. And, you know, they give you all of those kind of clues that she's a cool girl in that way, that there's, you know, now this definition of the cool girl who eats hot dogs and loves sports, but is also super hot at the same time. And all of those kind of, and that's this new annoying trope, right? But at the same time, she also says she's never had a boyfriend. Mm-hmm. And she's also the reason that I love her so much is that she is just absolutely herself at all times. And she honestly, genuinely, aside from Lucy Liu, doesn't seem to care. She's not conforming to a lot of people's expectations of what she should be.
Right.
And I love that about her. She does these things that are quirky. Eating popcorn out of her hood and going and stealing chips from the Mexican restaurant and never paying that guy, the waiter, any money. And so she has these kind of quirky, charming, tropey kind of qualities, but they seem absolutely rooted in who she is. She is being herself at all times.
Right.
And she recognizes that too.
Yeah.
You know, when he says in Yankee Stadium, oh, why don't men love you?
Men they love you.
They love girls who like sports.
Yes.
And she says, no. And I had to write it down because it's a whole thing. She said, guys like girls who like guys who like sports. They don't like girls who actually know anything about sports. They like girls wearing a crop top jersey serving them wings.
Correct. Yeah.
So she recognizes all of these things. She understands everything that's happening, and she is absolutely and utterly herself.
Yes.
And I love that about her.
Yes. And so the movie is about her because she delivers that line. And then the movie's about the sidekicks.
Yes.
So there's three people who this movie is really about, and none of them appeared in the little icon from Netflix.
The movie is not about Lucy Liu.
And it's not about Rick Otis. I don't know who plays him.
Taye Diggs.
And it's not about John Glenn.
John Glenn. He's, cardboard cutout, yes.
Right? And it's actually about her, because the American Jezebel has, described it very clearly. But it's also then about her roommate, Becca,
mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to jump to the next part. I think this is the next part we're in, because all kinds of things happen, right? Shenanigans ensue.
They lock him in the elevator.
Yeah, and then the guy takes off all his clothes and pees into the cups. And then there's creepy Tim down in the basement who they give a succulent to. You know, all these goofy things happen, but those aren't the characters.
They make them kiss at the Yankee Stadium, and they start dating, and it's all working out.
And then they have a disagreement, but then they go into their calendars, and they figure out what they, how they can get back together, and then they get them back together, and, oh, we've worked it out, even though they had trouble. See how good we are. Oh, my gosh. And then they go to a party. I think it's Sue's.
The engagement. Oh, yes, they go to the pool. Sue's pool party.
Yeah.
Because Sue's is a model.
Sue's is a model, so they're going to the party with all these models. And so Harper and Pete, we don't know his name, Harper and Pete go and
instantly become friends because they actually have personalities.
And their shared hatred of the void Charlie and the absolutely void Susie.
Yeah.
You know? And so they go to that party, and here's the first thing that, and I jumped ahead because they're going to go to the other engagement party, because Harper, ends up dating this other guy that they call Golf Guy because they go putt-putt golfing, and she met him on Tinder, I think, right, or something, some Bumble or whatever. Mm-hmm. She met him on a dating app, and then she goes on the date with him, and they go putt-putt golfing. They call him the Golf Guy, and he's perfect. Except that he doesn't call her back, and he hasn't done anything, et cetera, et cetera. And at the party, she's like talking to Charlie and Pete, and she says to them, "Why won't he call me back?" And then Charlie says, "Well, you got to just play hard to get. Men like girls that play hard to get." And then in her woke observation of everything, she's like, "Oh, so when the caveman left the cave and he came back and his woman wasn't there and there was no fire there, he's like, that's the woman I want? I don't think so." Right?
You want the woman who will keep the coziest cave.
You want the woman who will keep the coziest cave. You know, so why won't he call me back? He's perfect. And then Pete says, and this is a key line, "Your bar for perfect is pretty low."
Yes.
And so this is why Pete's a star of the movie too, because he's delivering the real substance of the movie. Her bar for perfect is pretty low.
Yes.
And if you watch the movie closely, he has now told you how this is going to end. And then they go from there to the engagement party of her friend, Becca, and her boyfriend, Mike, who does dress like a stepdad, listens to Creed.
Only the early stuff. And then every time an ambulance drives by, he goes, "Oop, there's my ride."
And so she gives this really delightful toast about her grandmother saying that life is about because and in spite of, right?
Yeah, so you like because and you love despite. Which is another meta moment of the movie telling us, this is what we're doing. Aren't we clever that we're telling you that we're doing it?
Yes, it's super meta because the setup with the bosses, they think they're in love because the assistants have made everything about them like each other.
Mm-hmm.
That they've lined up. They've told the one person what kind of food she likes. They've told the other person what kind of shirts he likes to wear. And so they've told each of the other ones exactly what they like. So all their likes have lined up. But they're not in love. Because you like because. You love despite. And so they've set up the one example of the liking because. And you think it's love.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't love because the despite is too great. And so they set that up. So she gives this beautiful toast to her, you know, love of her life, this goofy, quirky, nerdy dude that gets this super hot goofball, you know, because she likes him because, and she loves him despite. And so there's that great, you know, so now we've set it up.
Yes.
That's the actual setup, not the two bosses. Those two moments in the film set up the rest of the film. Okay.
Yes. And I actually have a theory that somebody else wrote like the middle, like 15 minutes of the movie between when they go to the pool party and when they go and get pizza. I think somebody else wrote that middle part because that is like, that hints at a much better movie.
Correct.
Because they give you that setup, which is a really lovely idea, And I think it could play out in a really nice way, that loving, you know, loving despite and liking because.
Yeah.
Then they have, like, even the pool party, you've got Pete who's telling you all the things that are happening in the movie.
Yeah.
You have this really charming moment. You can see the way that the mechanisms of the plot are working,
yeah,
that she recognizes that cardboard cutout John Glenn's girlfriend is not good for him, and the reasons why, it's all through their actions.
Yeah.
And then they go to this party and he says, you know, I'll come with you to play hard to get. Because, again, he's a white masculinity there.
But he actually, it's where he's most famous, because he teaches her to dance.
And it's also the moment when he's not wearing a suit.
Yeah.
He's dressed down. He's wearing these shorts that they hate because they're tiny.
Where's the rest of your shorts?
It's the only time that he's not wearing a suit. He's being casual. He's not trying to be somebody that he's not.
Right.
He's not trying to fit into this notion of masculinity and success and all of these things that he is completely bought into.
Yes.
In this moment, he's not, like, wearing the suit that represents all of that. Anyway.
He even says it when he's dancing, because he's, like, he's dancing and he's trying to teach her to dance. And she says, what are you doing? He said, I'm dancing. He says, just be yourself. Nobody's watching.
Mm-hmm.
So he even says
it's
it.
It's the
so
only it's, moment it's where he is, like, a real
moment.
Person. And
yes.
That's why I think that this, like, middle 10, 15 minutes is, like, some other movie. Because, yes, he actually dances. He's relaxed. He is himself in that moment,
yeah,
in a way that he never is throughout the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
He's a total cipher because he's just a man in a suit,
yes,
even though he's supposed to be the romantic lead.
Yes.
And then she starts dancing and he says, you look like one of those
inflatable men
in the car. And she does. But again, like, she doesn't care because she's being herself.
Yes.
Right? And they have this, and they play Dire Straits' Romeo and Juliet.
Yes. And she
even says, the soundtrack
is
great in there.
Romeo and Juliet, they love despite.
Yes. And it's and it's true. And so they
yes.
play this great song and they dance on the roof. And then they're both, they're like, we need to go get pizza.
Yep.
Right? And then you can see the roommate ordered pizza, but she lets them go. Because yep. then right after she says, I need to get pizza, goodbye. Then pizza shows up.
Yes.
And so the roommate knows to push them together.
Yes.
And they go and get pizza and they have this charming scene where they have to climb up the fire escape.
Yes.
And then they go and they sit on the floor and they eat the pizza and then they look at each other.
Yeah.
And that is the moment when all they do is look at each other.
Yeah.
And there's this moment where you can see everything shift in how they think about each other.
Yes.
And she says, okay, I need to go. And then she leaves.
Yes.
And that whole part is really good.
Yes.
I love that
yes.
15 minutes of it.
Yes.
And that's why I think it's written by, that part is like written by somebody else. The last thing I want to say about that is, like, that is absolutely my favorite part of the movie too, because somebody online has wrote a really, what I think is a really good thing, where they said, the most important thing in a rom-com is that people need to look at each other the right way. That a rom-com hinges on people looking at each other.
Yeah.
And that, and, like, you can see all these instances in, like, romantic films where you see the moment somebody looks at somebody else in that particular way. And that there are certain actors who are really good at, like, giving that look, and they built their career on it. And that is the moment in the movie that's the most charming, because that's the moment. It's not like they kiss. Nothing
yeah.
overtly romantic happens. They just look at each other, and it's a really good moment.
Well, I'm going to say there's another really great moment, and that's when they're dancing.
Uh-huh.
And so they're dancing to Sign, Sealed, Delivered, and uh-huh. that's when she's the blow-up thing, you know?
Yeah.
And he's got this hip thrust that's, like, incredible, right? It's
uh-huh.
just this great movement. It only works on his left side, so he can't do his right side, but he only has his left side at the hip thrust. And they're dancing in there. She's doing her blow-up man dance. And then the music just suddenly stops, and the intro, the dobro intro to Romeo and Juliet comes on.
So good.
And then he kind of turns sideways and he puts his hand out, and it's this, like, incredible gesture. And when he puts his hand out, she looks at him and he says, come on, don't be weird.
Uh-huh.
Right? And it is. So it's like a look,
mm-hmm.
because it is. It's like his whole heart is open. His hand is extended. You know, he is all out to her.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not even in the rom-com has to have a look. It has to have a gesture where, you know, like when we take tango dancing lessons, you know, the tango instructor says, the man makes a box, opens his heart, and invites the woman in. Right?
So he's opening his heart.
He made
her
a box.
In.
He opened his heart and he invited that woman. And so you're right. There is that
moment. Yeah.
Yes, it saves it. Brings the movie up into
that. Those 15 minutes are good.
And then
it all just falls apart because it all goes back to Lucy Liu and Tay Diggs
correct.
And the setup and the
yeah,
bosses
correct.
And all of that.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, What is also annoying about the movie, aside from the cutesiness of the setup, which is also not a Parent Trap, and it is also not Cyrano.
It is not.
It's neither of those things. And then they've told us halfway through the movie, oh no, our idea is about you like because correct. And you love despite. So they've shifted kind of what the thesis of the movie is correct. Halfway through instead yes. of introducing it at the beginning.
Correct.
Then they kind of try to rewrite who Lucy Liu is yes. because they realize, oh, both of these bosses are terrible. And we can't really, like, end the movie with both of them being terrible. Yeah. And so then in the last, like, 15 minutes, they decide, oh, let's save Lucy Liu's character yes. in the eyes of the audience.
Yes.
We will just blow up Taye Diggs' character. Yes. Both of them were kind of equally emotionally abusive yes. and rude and bad bosses, bad mentors.
Self-centered.
Yeah. There was very little that was redeeming about them.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing, this is also, again, true of both Harper and Lucy Liu. They actually had things that they wanted to do in their careers besides make money. Rick Otis and Charlie, the cardboard cutout, they both just want to make money, wear suits, be powerful men, mm-hmm. and be successful at making, like, what is a, like, don't offend any listener. What is a venture capitalist? You just get lucky because you pick the right things to invest in,
yeah.
right? And there's skill. I'm not saying there's not skill involved.
We can agree to disagree.
Agree to disagree on that one.
Don't be talking nonsense, Debbie.
So Harper admires Lucy Liu for actual reason. Lucy yes. Liu is very good at her job. She yep. breaks sports stories. She's a woman in yep. sports. There's a lot that's admirable about that. But she's not a nice person
yep.
or a very good person.
Yep.
Harper says, also wants those things, right?
But she's like, what is the sports moment that made you cry?
Yes. And that was her opening line to the golf guy.
Yep.
As, yes.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so she has this deep emotional connection to sports. She has this respect for Lucy Liu and the work that Lucy Liu does. So they actually do work that is meaningful to them beyond success and money.
Yeah.
And being able to go to this exclusive club where you can eat lobster. Right? Which is just, like, there's no depth to any of that.
Yeah.
But then they decide at the end of the movie, oh, we need to resurrect because also it's 2018 and this is a rom-com starring, you know, with these, you know, I guess with Harper is by far the star. So we need to kind of make sure that we have this moment between two strong women. So we're going to kind of change it so that Lucy Liu actually is a good person.
Yeah.
And that she was all along, she behaved the way that she did to give Harper a thick skin so that when the world came at her with these kind of things, that she would be able to withstand it.
Yeah.
Which is utter tosh. It's just, ugh.
Does not ring true.
Ugh, I hate that. I hate that yeah. trope of, I was mean to you because the world is going to be mean to you.
Yeah, I did it because I loved you.
Yes, that's a horrible thing. Yeah. I was mean to you because I loved you?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Now come back and work for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Come back into that relationship?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Ugh. Okay. And then she...
And so our star Harper says yes. no. Says no to her.
She says no.
Because that's what we expect from our star Harper.
Yes.
And then what has happened in the interim is that there's a brief Cyrano thing to make you think that they actually knew what they were talking about. And he even says, I didn't know who Cyrano was. I had to look it up. And I'm thinking maybe the writer that wrote the first third and the last third had to look it up as well. Because
so.
Then they forge this crazy scene in the airport where...
I fell asleep the first time I watched. I didn't
I
see
did
this
too.
Part.
I fell asleep in the first and second time I watched it during this part. I had to watch it a third time to get to this part. They're up on a balcony, the two bosses, the setups. You know, so Otis and Kirsten, you know, mm-hmm. Rick and Kirsten.
Let's call him Otis.
Otis. They're up in the balcony. And Charlie runs into the airport. And he's down below saying, he doesn't know you. He doesn't love you. Blah, 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 blah. Don't marry him. And then she says, what's my favorite food? And he doesn't know. But then the guy down below who's been doing all the puppeteering knows. And so
mm-hmm.
there's a guy walking by, you know, big, you know, from Missouri with his camouflage outfit on, says, do it, marry the young guy. Right. So he's rooting for Cyrano, whatever. And so you have like 2 minutes where you go, okay, I guess they did maybe know a little, but it's not a Cyrano situation.
No.
But it's kind of...
She didn't fall in love with Harper or Charlie.
I know, and whatever. And so we can kind of stretch it a long ways to make it kind of touch. Mm-hmm. So there's that brief moment, right? But in the interim, so there's that. But he's saying don't marry him because he is actually... Charlie, the assistant, has arranged for Otis to have one last fling with his ex-wife before he gets married again.
Mm-hmm.
And Harper finds out, and she's incredulous, and she said... I can't believe you did that. I'm going to tell him. And then she loses her job and blah, blah, blah. And so she's like, I can't believe that that's who you would be. You would choose, you know, he can't help it. You know, he's a selfish asshole, but mm-hmm. you have a choice and you've chosen that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't believe that's what you would choose. And then she walks away from him. Right.
Cause she's just the best.
She's just the best. So there she is with Lucy Liu, and Lucy Liu is saying, I did it for you. And then, because she is by far the star, she says, I'm not coming back to work for you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And she has written her article on the Geriatric Olympics. Mm-hmm. And she's walking out of the building, and there is Charlie, Cardboard Man, who has lost his job now because he broke up Otis's wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And he's standing outside in his scrubby clothes. And she comes out.
Again, says, another moment when he's not wearing a suit.
Yes. And she says, what are you doing here? And he says, blah, 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 I lost my job, blah, blah, blah. And he said, so I'm doing temp work. And so these are his words. I'm doing temp work to really find out what I like to do. But I know I like you. And so we're back to that middle section. So the writer of 1 and 3 was like, oh, the middle section writer was really good. Uh-huh. If I just bring the I like you theme back in, maybe this would be a great place to wrap it up.
Uh-huh.
Right? And so at this point, there's just complete cognitive dissonance in my head. I was like, wait, he likes her because.
Uh-huh.
But there's no despite. She is... just right on everything she has done with him.
Yeah, and all of his reasons, because, sorry, then they go get ahead, into, please. Because then she says in response to that, you displayed a total lack of character when it mattered.
Yes.
That is a big despite.
That is beyond despite. Whew, that is not a despite.
When you look up deal breaker in the dictionary, that yes. is a deal breaker. Yes. You displayed a total lack of character when it mattered.
Most.
And then...
Wait, we got to stay there for just a second, just to let it sink in. So, you like because, you love despite, and there are deal breakers, Grandma.
And there are deal breakers, Grandma. There are some things you do not love despite.
No. No. She was very clear with him in the moment. And he still chose...
the wrong thing.
Well, I wouldn't say the wrong thing, but he chose a thing that was not in line with who she would love.
Yes.
Yes?
Yes!
And of course, me as a moviegoer, and we'll see this in upcoming movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And at... 3 billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri. I like it when that movie ends like that one. So if you haven't seen that movie, I don't recommend watching it if you are not in the strongest frame of mind. It is a hard movie to watch. But the movie does not wrap it up for you at the end.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I like that in a movie.
I actually, people have hot takes on Black Klansman right now too, which is in theaters. I think it has a very similar thing. The ending is not wrapped up neatly in a little bow.
The Spectacular Now.
Yes.
Which we will be seeing in a couple weeks, mm-hmm. I think, in a couple episodes.
Mm-hmm.
It does not wrap it up in a nice little bow and make it all cozy for mm-hmm. us at home.
But set it up.
Writer part 1, part 3, who I believe has just graduated from college with their degree in screenwriting, and this is their first big project, said... I'm going to wrap it up all nice and neat and make those people feel great at the end.
Mm-hmm. Tie back in to what writer number 2
yep.
for that middle section. They brought in that great thing. Oh, perfect. I can just tie it up.
Just tie it in.
Perfect. And so then, because then doesn't he say something like, you use too many exclamation points?
No, she says,
okay.
you displayed a total lack, you know, and then she said, and you never blah, 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 and you don't blah, 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 blah. And he was like, what? And then he gets it. And then he said, you're a know-it-all. And you use too many exclamation points. And then they start bantering back and forth about all the things that despite are actually despites.
Yes.
Not total lack of moral character, which is not a despite.
Know-it-all and total lack of moral character are too not many exclamation equivalent
points. Too many exclamation points and a total lack of moral character are not equivalent in any realm whatsoever. And then they kiss and hug, and creepy Tim in the basement said, I knew I could get them to love each other. And then the movie ends.
And then there's like a tracking shot, and we're like, it's New York.
Yes.
Which is like, and then, yeah, because of course it is. It takes place in this shiny Manhattan that always is what happens in movies.
And I have to take a big sigh right now.
What happened to writer number two?
Who is writer number two?
Figure out who writer number two
somebody
is.
Help us.
Because somebody wrote a really good rom-com in the middle of not a good rom-com.
This movie was three movies.
A cutesy setup,
which was just completely innocuous.
It was frothy. It's why people liked Set It Up.
Yep, completely innocuous.
Because they saw the first movie.
Correct.
Second movie?
Really lovely.
Super nice. And they're really lovely. I feel like writer number two, and I know we have to wrap things up, but I was noticing this too, like, John Glenn is such a boring person, right? He's in his suit all the time. Yep. He's trying to make money. He says a job is just about making the most money. He's such a boring person, but I feel like there's those hints of him being a more interesting person that I think writer number two put in there. I stand by my two writer theory. Because there's all these moments too where he's like cooking.
This is a conspiracy theory.
This is my conspiracy theory about Set It Up. But there's like these moments where he's like cooking. And he's, like, making things.
Yes.
And I feel... And he's never wearing his suit when he's cooking. And I'm like, I feel like there's, like, hints in there of, like, there are things that he likes. And they just never explored those things.
Yes.
And so then he just becomes, like, this terrible character.
Well, he's not terrible. He's just
He's a bad character because there's nothing going on.
That's correct.
She's a great character because there's so much happening with her. She does use too many exclamation points.
Yeah.
She does come on too strong.
Yeah.
And that's her being herself, but you can see how other people would read it differently.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which makes total sense. Him?
That's why her roommate loves her.
Terrible character because there's nothing happening. Yeah. Except in the middle part. When there's a hint that there's something
else. Writer number two.
Yeah.
The writer on the grassy knoll.
They were doing really subtle work.
There was a writer on the grassy knoll.
Okay. All right. Gotta wrap it up.
Yeah. These are a half hour podcast that lasts 60 minutes. We're just going to have to agree to disagree again, right?
Yes. Agree to disagree. This was a 30 minute podcast. All right. So have we hit all the points we wanted to hit with this
movie? I think we have. Oh, no, but wait. No, wait. No, so there's a couple of things. So it's important, you know, so we're having this little podcast, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's two things. Number one, this is a father-daughter coming of age. Well, not so much coming of age. Liminal, right? We're talking about liminal spaces.
Yes.
And so we got to bring it back. You know, so why did we watch this together as father-daughter? So should we talk about the liminal space first? You know, what was the liminal space that she was in? You know, we talked about it earlier a little bit that, you know, she's 26 and she doesn't want to be a 28-year-old assistant. And then she says to her friend, we're too young, you know. We're not old enough to get married.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's not the liminal space she was in, though. Right?
Because what happens towards the end of the movie, after when everything falls apart and she loses her job and she loses this burgeoning relationship and her other relationship, what does she do?
She tries to write.
Yes.
So she goes to the restaurant and gets free chips and water.
Chips and water.
I'm going to give you the greatest tip a waiter has ever been given. But I forgot my wallet.
So. Yeah. So she goes and she tries to write.
Leave and never come back.
Again, somebody who should have their own movie.
The star by bar.
So she goes to the Mexican restaurant to go write this article because that's what she's wanted the whole time. It's why she's working as the assistant.
Yes.
To this terrible boss. It's because she wants a mentor in sports reporting. She wants to write stories that make her cry.
Correct.
About sports.
Correct.
Yes.
And so
Is she able to write the? Is she able to write her article?
Not initially, until her great roommate, Star by Far, comes and says, "You got fired." Oh yes! And then starts hitting her with a pillow. Just write the crappy first draft. You can't write a good one until you've written a crappy first draft.
Yes.
Annie Lamott, shitty first drafts, right? Mm-hmm. So then she goes to the restaurant to write. And
she does it. She writes a terrible draft.
But then she makes adjustments and she shows it to her boss. And then she's actually talking on the phone, making notes to herself on how to make the article even better when she goes outside to meet Mr. Nobody.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings us to the second point that's key to this discussion.
Yes. Which is, what do you come away with from, what is the message you come away with in this movie?
What is the message? So as a father of young women, I watch this movie and I say, oh, this is like maybe something that they might be marketing towards young women.
I think they probably are.
I think they may be. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say there was no explosions.
No.
There were no gunfire.
No.
Yeah. What's the rule?
The hair was shiny.
were there at any point two men discussing something besides a woman? Right. What's the rule for the
Bechdel test?
The Bechdel test. What's the male version of that?
Yes. What is the male version of that? Does it have to be two men who both have names discussing something other than a woman?
No, I think there's a different test.
There has to be a different test.
Different test.
For women's movies.
No, for men's movies.
Oh, that it passes a certain test as well.
Yeah. Okay. Because this one doesn't pass because there are two men in there discussing something besides how they're going to kill somebody or how they're going to steal something, right?
Yes.
So it does not pass the men's movie test, right? And they actually have full names. They don't have nicknames.
Yes.
So it does not pass the men's version of the movie test.
Yeah. So as a father of young women, and you're watching this movie that is probably marketed towards young women, and they're going to come out of it with a certain message.
Yes.
What is the message of this movie?
Well, so I'm hopeful at the end. I think I talked about this earlier. That my hope at the end was when she said, you displayed a total lack of character in a moment of crisis or whatever, right? And at that point she says, I cannot be with you. And she walks away.
Mm-hmm.
I've got bigger dreams. That's my hope as a father of young women, that's what that woman would say.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, the message that the movie presents is, she's getting old. She doesn't want 28 and an assistant. Her friend's
getting old. She's 26.
I know. Exactly. This is the message the movie's saying. So don't.
No, don't, I'm not critiquing
Debbie,
you.
Don't be calling me.
This is what you. This is what this, you're saying.
Correct.
But the movie says she's getting old. She's
the
26.
The movie says she's getting old. She's 26. She doesn't want to be 28 and be assistant. And her friend's getting married, so she's realizing. Right, and now she's seen golf guy and he's perfect, even though her bar for perfect is pretty low. And so then she's fallen in love with this guy and she likes him because, and she loves him despite, and then he has this gigantic lapse in character.
Mm-hmm.
And the message that is being sent at the end is, having a guy with a gigantic lapse of character is better than being single, so I will take him. Because she hasn't had a boyfriend for a while. I can't remember how to French kiss, she says.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so he, no personality, no goals of his own, no backbone, is better than nothing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the message to young women. I, as we talk more and more, I'm reevaluating what it's plummeting.
Wow.
It's plummeting.
We have our ratings in mind.
The ratings are coming up, and it was going to be much higher than it is now. That's for sure. All right, did we cover everything now?
I think we did, with the message of the movie and how it relates to the theme.
Correct. All right.
Shall we wrap things up by rating the movie?
And tell them what we're going to watch next time.
Yes. Yeah. So yes, let's start out with our rating. I think I went last time, so I think you should go first.
Okay, so just
on this
as
one.
A reminder, this we is an exponential.
And we can't rate each of the interval pieces of the movie.
No, this is going to be an overall rating.
Can I
rating.
Rate writer number one and writer number two?
No, we cannot take number two out of the middle and rate it. So we're going to rate the overall movie. And so we're going to, I'm just reminding you, so we're on a scale of one.
One.
You can't get a zero. You can't, but we could actually maybe get halves, but we're not going to go there. So So one kissing booth to 10,000. 100,000, I'm sorry. 100,000, yes. To 100,000 kissing booths. And so I'm going to go with... This is hard because I did like section number two, but section number two was not enough to overcome the ending, that the ending really did get after it. So I'm going to go with 178 kissing booths.
Wow. I had not really thought through my rating quite yet until we've finished our conversation.
Yeah.
And I was going to say something very similar. Because there are things that I like about it.
Yeah.
Writer number two, that whole middle section,
yeah,
was a good piece of a romantic comedy. And Harper was a good character.
Yeah.
And so were the side characters.
Yeah.
And so if we'd had a movie about that, it would have been a really good movie.
Yeah.
But if we average those things out, it really brings the whole thing down. So I was going to say something in that range too. I was going to go somewhere between 150 and 200 kissing booths.
I know. And so I think I'm going to have to go back to Grandma, mm-hmm, who said we like because.
Yes.
So we liked it because of Harper.
But
and Becca.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we loved it despite the overbearing bosses and the bad reference to the,
mm-hmm,
you know, so we loved it despite those.
Mm-hmm.
But Grandma forgot the deal breaker.
Yeah.
And the deal breaker really was when she said, in a moment when you needed to show moral courage and, you know, you did not.
Yeah.
You know?
That was,
so what were her exact words?
You showed a total lack, what was it? You displayed a total lack of character when it mattered.
Yes. And that's a deal breaker.
That is a deal breaker. Yes.
Yes.
So I'm going to say...
And so before coming in to the conversation, I was thinking in the thousands.
Mm-hmm.
And then the more we talked about it, it actually was, I liked it because,
mm-hmm,
I loved it despite. And the more we talked about it, no.
You can't.
It was a deal breaker.
Yeah, you can't love despite those things.
Yes.
Even if you do love it.
I loved it despite the fact that he was a cardboard character.
You still don't want to stick around with it.
I'm not sticking around with the total lack of character.
Yeah. So I would say I'm going to give it 190 kissing booths.
Yeah.
And those 190 are due to writer number two, Harper, and those side characters.
The star by far.
Star by far. She was. I hope she gets a better movie.
Yeah.
I really, really hope she gets a better movie.
Yeah.
I always confuse her.
Speaking of better movies.
So and we can't, as much as we might want to,
we're over a half an hour.
Oh no, we are over half an hour. Okay, so our last, to wrap things up, thank you for sticking with us through 30 full minutes. in 2 weeks time, more like a week and a half, the first Saturday of September,
correct,
we will be back and we will be reviewing
The
Kissing Booth.
Kissing Booth.
So we've really primed you all by giving you a rating system based on the Kissing Booth.
Yep.
I think you get an indication of our feelings about the Kissing Booth based on the rating system that we've created.
But please.
Around it. But we want you to
go into it with open hearts and open minds.
Yes. Just like that moment where he reaches out his hand.
Romeo and Juliet is playing in the background.
Yes, the first strains
of
Romeo
and Juliet. Do I need to
get my
guitar and play for you right now?
I think you do.
Okay, you keep talking. I'm running to get my guitar. Hold on, folks.
So, despite the fact we may have primed you, and we know how strong priming can be, we want you to go into The Kissing Booth, which is also on Netflix. We're really, Netflix should be a sponsor of this show.
You should be.
We want you to wear some tiny shorts. We want you to look at a girl on a rooftop.
Stop. Yeah, yeah.
And we want you to turn, and we want you to reach out your hands and watch The Kissing Booth with an open heart, just like Charlie, cardboard cutout. Because that was the moment he almost...
That was true, Romeo.
Jesus, so we'll see you all in 2 weeks.
Talking nonsense!